And now, a thought from Geico Motorcycle.
It took 15 minutes to take a spirit animal quiz online.
Please be the cheetah. Please be the cheetah.
And learn your animal isn't the cheetah, but the far less appealing blobfish.
Oh, come on.
To add insult to injury, you could have used those 15 blobfish minutes to switch your motorcycle insurance to Geico.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on motorcycle insurance.
I can't believe it.
That Gerald is presenting the quarterly budget report with finger puppets?
Look, here comes a 1.7% decrease in fixed overhead. Hello, everybody!
No, I can't believe how easy it was to save hundreds of dollars on my car insurance with Geico.
Who are you? The projected increase in organic Q3 revenue. Hooray!
Believe it, Geico could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Hey guys, what's going on? You are listening to This Week in Geeks Botched Role. I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dodd, and as you guys know, I love me some role-playing games. Most often you can hear me over at TerribleWarriors.com, where I most often get my ass kicked by little six-sided dice. Sometimes it's funny, sometimes it'll make you cry. So guys, over the last little while, I've been talking about, like I said, role-playing games. And because we live in the year 2015, the table has changed, so to speak. And what do I mean by that? Well, as we live in a connected world, be it digital or otherwise, sometimes it's not always...
Johnny got a toy golf set when he was three, and from that day on, he was hooked. All he wanted to do was golf, golf, golf. He'd be on the links before school, after school. All he ever wanted was to go pro. And then, one day, when he was holding his grandson and thinking about his 12 handicap, Johnny realized it just might not happen for him. But you know what did happen for him? He switched to Geico and saved a bunch of money on car insurance. So that was good, and so was hanging out with his grandson.
As simple as getting your friends together around a table and playing a game of D&D, Pathfinder, Shadowrun, whatever. And that's why we have the internet. Now, there's been a lot of people that play games over Skype or other kind of websites which assist in dice rolling and whatever. Even IRC bots have done that for quite a number of years. But most recently, I got an email to check out this program called Fantasy Grounds. You might be saying, well, Michael, what the hell is that? Fantasy Grounds is pretty much your one-stop shop virtual tabletop. Just realized that rhymed. And it does so much cool stuff. I'm actually a little bit kind of blown away by it, especially considering this has official Dungeons & Dragons support built into it. Since 5th edition came out a little while ago, some of you are probably playing that around your kind of tables right now, and there's new adventures coming out all the time for it. And Fantasy Grounds actually has one of them built into it, which I think is tremendously cool. So I want to welcome Greg Tito to the show. He's the communications manager with D&D over at Wizards of the Coast. And Doug Davison, he is the president of SmiteWorks, the guys who built Fantasy Grounds. So guys, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, I knew we were gonna say it over each other.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Doug.
But guys, I've gotta say, I am tremendously impressed with just how fully featured this program is. And like I said, especially now that people are using the internet to play role-playing games more often than I've ever seen before. Definitely in the last year and a half, I see a lot more people advertising them doing this. I actually see a number of people play these over YouTube and even Twitch right now. So I guess, Doug, let's start with you. Give my listeners the rundown. What is Fantasy Grounds?
Fantasy Grounds is just an application interface for playing role-playing games. So it's pen and paper style. It's not a full-blown computer program or a character generator or just the insoles. It's actually meant specifically for playing the game online, just like you would around the table.
Now, when you say, like, it's like playing around the table. You spent actually about almost an hour with me just kind of going through this. And I think you sell yourself a little bit short just because this program has the ability to do so much more than just have people around a virtual kind of tabletop. I mean, I would love for you to talk about this. What does this offer game masters?
Yeah, so the game master is the primary focus for the application. So we want to make it easy for people to be players in the game, obviously, but for the game master, it has a lot of tools to help you organize and plan out your adventures and your campaigns, to track everything that you would want to track, as far as like when you're in combat, it does your initiative tracking, much like you would do with index cards and flipping through that way, but in a much more streamlined sort of fashion. And then having all of your notes handy and available at any point in time to where just everything is at your fingertips within like one or two clicks. You can get to where you need to get to help run your game very smoothly without having to then stop and pause and go flip through a set of books and rules to find the specific setting that you need or the specific, you know, piece of information you need. So everything is right there. And then we've built in a whole lot of different automation features that really help run that faster as well and help all the management so that you can really focus on the role-playing aspect of it and you can really dive into the story. And hopefully, you know, once you're comfortable with the system and once your player is comfortable with the system, that you can play more adventures and you could play through more content in the same amount of time that you would have beforehand. And that way you can make it through all of these great adventures that, you know, Wizards of the Coast is pushing out. And they've floated down to just a few of them a year now, but even at that rate, you know, depending on how often your group gets together, you know, the faster you can consume that content, the more gaming you can play.
Now, I want to switch this over to Greg. Now, Greg, you obviously probably see a lot of community people get together and do programs like this unofficially. What made Fantasy Grounds attractive to get official D&D support?
We have been talking to Doug and looking at Fantasy Works for a long time. It's a fully featured tabletop that gives all DMs all the tools that they want to play the way that they want to play. So when we were coming up with ideas for how to support this kind of online play, which you mentioned in the intro of more and more people are using, you know, online connectivity to play when they can't get together face to face. When we were looking at trying to support that, Fantasy Grounds was an awesome choice for us because it did all the things that we wanted it to do and also let DMs, you know, run a low-tech game as well. You know, it can just facilitate simple dice rolling. It can be as complicated as you want it to be and give all the nitty-gritty that you need for those more power users too. So we just like that it had the full breadth and felt very much like the tools that we offer for the tabletop role-playing game, and that, you know, you can use all these things. They're options. They're things that can enhance your game, but we don't want to force people down any specific route. We want to give people as many options as possible, and that was Fantasy Grounds for us.
So this question can be to either one of you. With seeing people come together, like we said, online so often, what is the hope by having programs like this out there and having official support for it?
I was just going to say that the hope is to get more people playing Dungeons & Dragons. You know, I think the tabletop game has been around for a long time, you know, 40-plus years. It's become a huge part of our culture. It's spawned video games. It's a brand that is huge. But the soul, the core of it is the tabletop experience. But we acknowledge that it's difficult for players to get around a physical table. I mean, people have work, they have family, they have other needs. It's hard to meet on that weekly basis. So the hope for us in supporting Fantasy Grounds is to just get more people playing, you know, who love that fantasy gaming, the same being with your friends, you know, planning out what monsters around that corner, rolling that 20 to score a critical hit and slay the dragon. You know, we just want more people experiencing that, and we're embracing that online is a big growing way for players to enjoy Dungeons & Dragons.
And I would say, you know, very much the same sort of thing that Greg had said. A lot of times when you're playing in a role-playing game in a campaign that runs for a long period of time, you form a really tight bond with all the other players and with the GM, if you're not the GM or the DM or whatever. And so I think this is somewhat unique to Dungeons and Dragons and the role-playing in general, that you do that. It's a lot different than friends that you might make in other avenues or areas. So when you actually move away from people, I mean, I know a lot of times, you know, people remember the games and the campaigns that they ran with people 20 years ago or maybe more. And you want to get back, and people have enjoyed that to such an extent that they want to continue playing with those same people, but oftentimes they're not able to because, you know, as real life kind of interjects, people tend to move away to different areas. A lot of people started gaming maybe in college or maybe in high school and then moved and got married, and they could even be in the same town, and then just getting together in the same physical location in a large town is sometimes complicated as well, especially when people have children that, you know, they want to drive and go away and leave their children, you know, in the evenings or something like that. But if they were able to log in once their kids go to bed and play and get that same experience that they had before, then I think to me that's really what we are hoping to see, you know, with these sorts of tools like this, whether it's Fantasy Grounds or another tool, just to allow people to continue to have that sort of an experience.
So one of the questions, and this is more for you, Doug, how long was the development for Fantasy Grounds? Just the fact that, like I said, it is so open-ended, it can be really simple or really, really complex. How do you even begin to approach that from just a development standpoint? Because I can't imagine the man hours that went into something like this.
Oh, there's an awful lot of man hours. So the history of Fantasy Grounds is it was actually started originally in 2004, and it's undergone continuous development from that very starting point. And so I was not one of the original creators of Fantasy Grounds. In fact, I came into it as an end user back in 2008. When I was moving away from my gaming groups in Illinois that I was playing with and wanted to continue to have, you know, that same regular experience with those people. So I looked around and found Fantasy Grounds, looked at some other competitors, and really Fantasy Grounds, you know, I gravitated towards that just because I saw a lot of other potential as well. And I was a software developer full time. I had a software development company. And so I actually, after having used it for quite a while and having been able to build my own rule sets, and new kind of game system user interfaces out of it, I reached out to the owners that were out of Finland and asked if they'd be willing to sell it. And then I was able to eventually purchase the program in 2009. And then so it's undergone continuous development from 2009 to today. And we've continued to add a lot more, you know, rule sets and support and thankfully eventually now an official D&D license.
So now I'm going to bounce this question back to Greg here. What made Fantasy Grounds the perfect place to have 5th edition integration?
Well, I mean, I kind of already answered that, but it's to me, Fantasy Grounds is a tool that's very robust and has all the features that you might want to use. You know, I mean, with right now we have the Adventure of the Lost Mines of Phandelver on there, and it's very much a tool that allows DMs to play, you know, the scripted adventures that Wizards of the Coast produces, and then also gives them all the tools they need to do their home brew games or any variation in between there. You can cobble stuff using monsters, you can create your own monsters, you can, you know, use maps and dungeons that you're able to find online and integrate them in your game on Fantasy Grounds. So there's just so many options available that supporting it with 5th edition and allowing that kind of content to be in there just seemed like a no-brainer for us. And then also we really enjoyed the ability for people to get in on it at a price point that isn't too huge. I mean, we know that you have to buy the client and do this, but Fantasy Grounds is really great in that it supports a subscription model and lets players really pick and choose the content from D&D 5th edition that they want to integrate within their game. So, you know, for many of the players, people have had the books already. They enjoy the printed books in front of them, and as far as that goes, they could play fifth edition using Fantasy Grounds without using the products that Doug supported on the store and on Steam. But if you want to have it already integrated and have all the dice rolling and have all the leveling and all the mechanics and rules integrated seamlessly with the Fantasy Grounds client, you can pay in a kind of piecemeal way pretty cheaply. If you have a DM that has a license, an ultimate license, you can share that with an unlimited number of players and play in the game for no charge. And then each of the players, if they want to access those players, they can do so when they're connected to the DM. Or if they want to work on their characters offline when the DM isn't there, they can purchase individual player packs and class packs. And it was just a way for us to kind of democratize the D&D 5th edition content so that people could get whatever they needed in order to enjoy it online.
Now, let's talk about the subscription model that you mentioned. What is that?
So I'll take that one. So we have a couple different options. So there's a $3.99 a month subscription that allows you to be a GM. You can do all the creation. You can have any of the different purchases that are available on the storefront. And then you can host a game for any other player who also has either a subscription or a license of Fantasy Grounds. And then there's an ultimate subscription as well, which is $9.99 a month. And it basically provides all of the same functionality and the assets and the content and so forth, but it allows players to connect using only the demo. So they don't have to your players have to purchase nothing at all whatsoever. So they just download the product, the demo version of the product, and they can connect to your game since you're running the ultimate version.
All right, then. So one of the questions that I love to ask, because you guys are evidently huge role-playing nerds, I want to get a little bit of a feel for sort of your histories with this. And I'll bounce this question back to Greg. Basically, what is your nerd cred when it comes to working with kind of D&D? Because I know we kind of briefly touched upon this before the call started, but I always like to get a feel for what's your nerd cred for working with D&D?
Sure. Well, I mean, I had a strong religious upbringing, so I'll put that out there first. I wasn't as big of a nerd as I think I wanted to be when I was younger. So to me, the reading the first edition Monster Manual and DM's Guide and everything were kind of clandestine pleasures that I had. And it was always hard for me to come up with a gaming group when I was young, because I couldn't ask my mom for a ride, to the local DM, gaming store or stuff like that. So to me, there was always this wonderful arcane world of playing Dungeons and Dragons that really and made my imagination go crazy. And I read all like the Dragonlance novels and of course Lord of the Rings and all the big mainstays. So fantasy was always a big part of my life. And then it wasn't. I mean, I had a few groups in college and high school, but none of them were consistent. And then I moved to New York City out of college, and I got married. And there was something in my brain that was like, oh, wait a second. I can play Dungeons & Dragons now. I'm an adult. So I reached out, and I found some people on a gaming forum at nerdnyc.com, which is a great forum that gets people together to play all kinds of games, like D&D and role-playing games especially. And we had a great group. Some of them I went on to work together and writing our own RPG content. So I actually wrote a few supplements for 4th edition for Goodman Games, as well as I think I had an article on Wizards of the Coast, Dragon Magazine, back in the day as well. And then I went to go work for The Escapist, which is an online magazine devoted to video games, but also I'm proud to say we covered tabletop role playing a lot, and we played it a lot in the office as well. And I contributed to the creation of another book, The Adventure of Conqueror King System, which took a lot of old school D&D stuff and brought it more into have more crunch and campaign style play, which I really enjoyed. But through it all, Dungeons and Dragons was always my passion. I thought it was such a great tool for sparking imagination and especially getting young people involved in creating and, you know, even teaching small skills like math and arithmetic to someone in the context of a game is something I was always really appreciative of. I recently got a job here at Wizards of the Coast as a communications manager, and I'm happy to work for a company and a brand that I've been loving since I was a child.
Wow, that's, yeah, definitely you're the right guy for the job. And Doug, what about you? What is your nerd cred when it comes to working with the role-playing game industry?
Sure. Well, for me, you know, I came across, you know, we used to go up to the bookstore, you know, as a family and that sort of stuff, and I would always see these kind of shrink-wrapped adventure modules with this really evocative artwork on it, and I remember asking, hey, can I grab one of these? And a friend would say, oh, no, that's not for you, because I don't know if it was the monsters or if it was the attractive women on the covers that originally drew my attention, but regardless, I wanted to find out what was inside those little shrink-wrap products back then. And I managed to get lucky one time. I got dragged out by my mother to a yard sale, and I saw that someone had the red box set for sale, the yard sale, for some ridiculously cheap price. Like someone's mother was making them get rid of all their stuff. And so I snagged a copy, and I don't remember how old I was at the time. I might have been maybe 10 years old or something like that. And I got home, and I read through it as much as I possibly could, and then right away I got some of my friends together and said, hey, you guys have to try this out. So I became a DM from a very early age, and I think we botched the rules horribly for quite a while before I started to realize, oh, okay, that's what you're supposed to do. But just the whole idea of, you know, you could become someone else. It was like pretend on steroids in a sense, and you could go through and you could say, okay, well, what kind of equipment can my character have? And just thinking about, man, I can carry around a 50-foot section of rope and a 10-foot pole. What am I going to do with that? I don't know. But, you know, that sort of stuff was, you know, really appealing to me at that point in time. And so I ran games for years and years, and I bought lots and lots of – I used to go, you know, cut lawns as much as possible and then save up my money and then go buy more of it and lots of little figurines and paint them all up and do that kind of stuff. So I did that throughout the majority of my childhood. I remember my parents asking me from time to time, when are you going to outgrow all this stuff? And thankfully, I never had to. And so now I get to do this, you know, as my career. And, you know, I thankfully, the world has kind of caught up, I think, and now realizes that nerds are the coolest thing you can be, I think. So we've got, you know, we basically get to do what we love. And if you work, you know, on something you love, you never work a day in your life. And that's something that I truly believe in, and I think it's true.
Well, that's definitely true. The nerds have definitely inherited the earth. So I guess my final question to both of you is, over the course of your role-playing game careers, spanning easily 20 years apiece, what's been your favorite setting, and what was the name of your first character?
I'll take that one first. So for me, you know, I used to DM a lot first, and then before I got to play, because my friends didn't have a lot of the books. But my favorite campaign setting is Spelljammer. I just love the idea of these ships that go up into space, and I really like that setting, and I've ran it a couple different times. So for me, that's my favorite setting, and it's kind of weird and it's quirky, but as a GM, what I found, or as a Dungeon Master, what I found that I really, really liked about it is that I could take the players wherever I wanted to be, because I hate to have players stay in one area too long where it's always the same thing and, oh my gosh, we're fighting orcs again or this or that or whatever. So with Spelljammer, what you have is you have an easy mode of transportation that allows you to, you know, you could create an entire world for them to stop by and visit. So yeah, they just need to replenish their air and stock up on supplies, but what's going to happen when they land? What kind of culture are they going to experience and interact with? And I could draw from all of these different novels that I was reading, and I could use those as inspiration for individual worlds that I create. And then if there were times when I didn't want to create my own world, I could then, they could take it to a world that already existed. So they could land directly on Faerun, and they could run in the Forgotten Realms and do some stuff there. And then to keep the player's interest longer, if I wanted, then I could give them some reason to then leave Faerun and go off someplace else. And then, you know, that, it was just like an endless supply of adventure ideas and concepts and that sort of stuff. For the characters, I've run so many characters, I don't really know if I have any one particular favorite. I'll just say that one thing that I always like to do, I seem like there's a common theme among a lot of my characters. They're all smart alecks that their mouth gets them in more trouble than their skills can get them out of. so that's kind of a common theme.
What about you, Greg? What's your favorite setting?
For me, I think my favorite setting is Greyhawk, actually. I mean, that was the vanilla setting for D&D for a long time. So, like I said, all those books that I read back when I was a kid kind of used those as the backbone for vanilla D&D. And then when we, that gaming group I mentioned in New York City, we played through the Age of Worms campaign, which was, you know, created by Paizo back when they were working for Dungeon Magazine. And that was set in Greyhawk and had a lot of great culture and history behind it. You know, you had the Wind Dukes of Aqua doing the Rod of Seven Parts and all those cool little mythological elements really connected with me as someone who loved all the old modules and stuff that was written about D&D in the 80s. So I still think Greyhawk has a place in my heart for that. And then my favorite character would also be the character I used in that campaign, which was his real name was Todd Hedren. He was a half-elf living among humans. He wasn't sure who his elven father was. And he was kind of shy and meek, and the other human children in the town where he lived took to calling him Toad because he had kind of the almond-shaped eyes and pointed ears of a half-elf. Didn't really quite fit in. So it was fun because that character, I was able to use a lot of, you know, how I felt about role-playing at the time, because as I said, I loved the fantasy elements and everything, but I was kind of new to the idea of playing a character around the table. So his meekness and shyness kind of worked to that level, and I really ended up connecting with him, and the DM I worked with had a great storyline. You know, Todd Hedren's mother and how she came to have Toad and all that was all worked into the campaign and actually kind of had a real huge impact on the character. So, you know, that was the one that we played that character from first level all the way to like 22nd level.
Wow.
The entire age. So I guess that also has the character that I played probably the longest, you know, in game time and in actual time. I think it took 3 or 4 years for us to finish the entire campaign. So just for all those factors makes that the character that had the most impact for me.
Is there any chance we might see Toad in a future supplement?
Ooh, I'll have to talk to the R&D guys here at Wizards and see if they can work him in.
I was about to say, you have the power.
That's so funny because I actually went through all these files of all my old character sheets and I found all the printouts I had of Toad. So I have them set it up almost from like level 1 to level 22 as well. So hey, they're ready to be used. I'll make sure and just drop them in the bathrooms here at the offices here so that they want to, oh, this is an intriguing character. Who made this?
Well, guys, I got to thank you tremendously both for spending time with me today, and more time than I actually expected. So thank you, Greg. Thank you, Doug. Thank you, everybody who helped make this possible, our silent partner who's listening. This has been a tremendously fun episode of Bots Roll. So, guys, once again, thank you so much. I want you guys to hang on the line for just a second.
Thanks.
Well, guys, that was my interview with Doug and Greg. My Lord, we learned a lot today. Like I said, guys, go check out Fantasy Grounds. Let me know if you guys are actually going to be using this. I'm going to see if I can get my group into checking this out. Plus the fact, like I said, there's so much community stuff there you can use, which is really neat. There's so many supported systems. D&D 5th edition, we've already played that on TerribleWarriors.com earlier this year with Steve leading our first D&D campaign, despite the fact we've been around RPGing that podcast for over 2 years now. Maybe we'll come back and revisit 5th edition later on, because as I understand, there's going to be something really awesome happening later on this year, so I'll be checking the Wizards of the Coast website to find out what I'm talking about. But anyway, guys, so for this edition of Botched Roll here on ThisWeekInGeek.net, I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying, let's hope you never roll a natural one.
Want to see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show.
So don't miss it.
What the hell happened to George Lucas?
Oh my God, there's snot on my face. And I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dub. And I'm not a join. What the f*** does that mean? That 10 seconds.
No, you gotta keep that.
Let's do this. Let's do this right the first time.
F*** you guys. Ew, it's in my mouth. Oh, God.
Oh, what's it taste like, Mike?
Water. Ew, salty.
Let's start this episode with shat.
Okay, I'm good. Geico.
Holy shit. Oh, my gosh. Freak. Die. Holy crap. Whoa. Whoa, my God, whoa. Where did it go?
I'm like a stupid monkey.
As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear, somebody random. I don't know. Maybe even a hot chick. Yeah, let's go with that.
Did anyone ever tell you that you were very, very sexy?
How are you? Actually, no.
They never will.
Check out our website, thisweekingeek.net, for more geek content. As well, subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Send us a Twitter message by replying to @ThisWeekInGeek. Lastly, you can email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. This extra music was produced by Pronobozo at pronobozo.com. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the... Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Old moon, yeah. That's Hugo tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-oh! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.